Hello, everybody. Bo Billington back with another episode of Finding That Next Gear, where the sole purpose is to talk to high growth entrepreneurs, find out how they brought a company from ideation, inception to growth, scale, and ultimately potentially exit. Super pumped to have Brad Stevens on the wire today. Brad, thanks for joining.
Absolutely, Bo. Happy to be here, and we can help the next entrepreneur out there. Hopefully, miss some of the blood, sweat, and tears we've navigated. You know, all the better.
Well, that's the thing is that there definitely is some blood, sweat, and tears. And a quick bio before we jump into things. So, Brad, you and I actually met about 6 years ago or so, right when you started the company, Outsource Access. What's been really interesting to me is that I feel like I've been able to kind of watch from the outside on LinkedIn and the blitzkrieg that you did with video and content. And it seems like you've really, really grown over the last few years. But in short, currently you manage an offshore virtual services firm. 500 or so employees with a goal of getting to 1,000 by the end of the year, which is crazy. Got to 500 in 3.5 years. So congratulations on all the success. And then also you're heavily involved with EO, the Entrepreneur Organization, as well as a keynote speaker. So how do you find all the time to do the keynotes, EO, as well as grow a company?
Well, this is actually a hologram. This isn't actually Brad. Brad's on a plane somewhere. So
that's, am I talking part of the VAs currently?
Exactly. I'll pull my mask off in a minute. I mean, it's definitely a journey of constantly just iterating and learning and iterating. And, I've been an entrepreneur for 20 years. And so certainly have improved my journey, along the years, but, just constantly being a learner and observer of others. I certainly haven't figured all this out on my own. And you mentioned EO has been a huge part of my life for the last decade, and just constantly putting myself in the way of others and their experience and books and content, but also being cautious about not over consuming, right? I think some entrepreneurs and business owners, they can get a lot of endorphin hits about listening to the next podcast, the next conference. It's easier to go consume more stuff than it is to actually squeeze all the juice and execute what you've already learned. Right. So I've also tried to be cautious to put blinders on. Once I've got critical mass of things I can tackle, let's go execute that instead of consuming more ideas.
Oh, I get it. I'm a victim of analysis paralysis. I've got 15 books on my desk currently, and I've read, about 10 of them halfway. But let's talk a little bit about you. So you mentioned you've been an entrepreneur for 20 years. Were you the guy who was like, cutting grass in high school or in college? Like, that was always going to be the path? Or did an opportunity present itself some time ago that you jumped on and haven't looked back since?
Yeah, like most entrepreneurs, everybody's got their lemonade stand, kind of story. For me, it was Micro Machines. I've shared this a bunch of times. It's kind of the little tiny toys. I don't know, age-wise, yeah. You may remember the guy that spoke, super fast. And
I'm 43, man. So that was right.
Yeah, that's right. We're both 43, right? So we're both prime time, like the days of like Big League Chew and Fun Dip and Micro Machines. But yeah, so I mean, I grew up in an entrepreneurial type family. And so my dad drove me to school every day. And, my mom did too, as well. My dad, I just remember, was a lot of on his way to work and always just would ask questions and download and whatever. It was always a part of the dialogue in my household. So I would always ask for Micro Machines for Christmas and birthdays and so forth. And so I ended up amassing several hundred of them. And I was in third, fourth grade. I would actually take them I went to a little Christian school and I would carry them in these Crown Royal bags, which they loved. But like my parents enjoyed some Crown Royal from time to time. And sure. That was a nice little bag I'd carry in, and I actually rented them to my friends. I actually still have this like folder. I had a VP of marketing. I had frequent shopper cards. I actually had a customer newsletter. This was like 1989 dated at the top of it. I typed out. So something was encouraged and kind of around me young. So had that, and got shut down eventually, creating too much distraction. But then I started a tutoring company in high school to kind of put myself through, make some extra cash during the summers. I'd go pull all the middle school counselors and say, hey, who needs help with math, kind of getting through the next year, or kind of jumping ahead. And so I would do that. And then one thing led to another. And went to college, came home, was going to work for a company in Atlanta here. They ended up going under right before I was supposed to start with them unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And it was a fork in the road. I had some other job offers or go ahead down this entrepreneurial craft I was probably going to take anyway. And that's all I've done. So I took that path and tucked my tail, had a Buckhead apartment with a guy. I was going to live the life single, living in Buckhead, Atlanta. And I was like, you know what? So I tucked my tail, moved back in. My parents, so gracious and thankful for them, but decided, take the entrepreneurial path. And that's what I've done. So built companies in different industries, product businesses, service-based businesses, leading up to the current company with Outsource Access now, which is probably the most exciting passion of business I've had.
Let's talk about that a little bit. So, what does your company actually do for those who are listening? Like, what's the focus area, value prop, and how have you achieved so much growth in, better part of 6 years?
Yeah, I mean, kind of the short highlights, to it. And I can share with listeners too. I mean, I do a whole speaking and 3-hour workshop and all this stuff and the journey and what have you, but net result, the company I had prior to this, we had a product disaster happen. We manufactured distributed teeth whitening products. You know, manufacturer changed a component, caused us to have a bunch of failing product, cash got tight. I'd heard about this whole offshore outsourcing gig economy world. Yeah. Was left in a place I had to learn it in order to save the business at the time, which I did. Ended up exiting that business and had this knowledge set around outsourcing gig economy and just loved it. I started working with people and just realized how I could scale and make dollars stretch. And I did a lot of speaking, educating, consulting on it. And sure. then it was actually my former EO that said, hey, why don't you launch a business around it? And so I said, yeah, why not? That sounds fun. Let's go to the other side of the planet and go build a company. And so I flew to the Philippines, where my first VA I'd worked with was there, because it's English speaking, Americanized culture. And started in middle of 2019. And so now we've grown, like I said, about 530 employees here right up just over 4 years later. And you know, key tenets of what we do, I mean, we basically serve, we kind of look at ourselves. I'm a big fan of, you know, don't sell the drill, sell the hole in the wood, right? The hole sure. in the wood is what business owners want. And for us, we're really a growth and scaling partner, really, is what we are. We happen to use an offshore outsourcing virtual staffing firm to kind of help do that. But we're in about 60 different industries, and we do everything under the sun for small to medium business owners to get clarity on where their needs, their constraints are, and either work directly with their senior staff. We're doing marketing, operations, customer service, bookkeeping, anything imaginable to support them for, you know, cost-effective kind of rate to help them scale and grow. And not really replacing people, but really augmenting a lot of their existing staff a lot of times as well. So it's an interesting journey, and you know, we're most continue to the path ahead and finding out the new markets to engage.
Sure. So, you know, my company's in the gig economy as well, albeit in a different sector. So I'm assuming, and VAs have been around forever, so I'm assuming product market fit was there, but how did you kind of, how'd you edge into this marketplace though? Because it seems, I don't want to say it's crowded, but there's definitely a lot of players. Philippines, I personally have a, you know, assistant from the Philippines as well. Like, how did you actually make waves and kind of go to market and get the brand and the name out there?
Yeah. I mean, the big part was, it was education. You know, it is educating people about this space and what it is and how does it work. You know, a lot of people had read Tim Ferriss' 4-Hour Workweek book. You know, I think that was like almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Ago that it was written. And that was the only reference point that a lot of people had. And it was this like novelty concept. And like, you had these like, you know, platforms, Elance and Odesk were out there, and people were playing around with it to go find, you know, this low cost logo for $5 kind of thing. And so it was more this novelty concept, and all the speaking I've done, I don't know, 150 organizations globally, is kind of explaining how it's shifted from this novelty to a fundamental way of how small medium businesses are growing, and to bridge the gap mentally that, you know, you can actually make this work and integrate it. You know, it's not just the Fortune 1000 that have call centers, right? And a lot of people have preconceived notions. When you say outsourcing or offshore, people immediately go to a certain framework in their head, either from their own experience, when they had a bad call center experience, when they called Comcast for customer service and the person didn't know what they were talking about and there was an accent, to other people that they've, you know, talked to that have been burned on it. So a lot of it was educating and sharing my own journey of what it was like finding someone. Young 23-year-old woman that had never been a VA before in her life, had a 4-year college degree, super smart, great English in the Philippines, and showed me her ability to learn and grow, and is now my COO over 530 employees, right? I was like, did I find a unicorn here? But no, it's like, if you find the right people and you engage in them, you pay them well, you treat them well, and that's a big part of it as well. So a lot of how did I get into it? It was, you know, doing a lot of speaking for organizations, a lot of speaking in EO, a lot of speaking YPO, Sage, Vistage, and so forth. And from the consulting that I did for a number of years, I got to work with a lot of small business owners and hear their constraint points and challenges so I could, you know, speak to those and then be very case study driven. Not just, hey, this exists, but let me show you 30 case studies. Here's a commercial HVAC business that went from 0 to 15 people in the Philippines, and now they're scaling faster than they ever have. Here's a concrete manufacturer in St. Louis. Whoever thought a concrete manufacturer in St. Louis could use 5 VAs in the Philippines, you know, to actually pay them to get educated in project management that are doing work, right, to, you know, a shoe manufacturer using VAs to manage logistics with their supply chain in Cambodia and China. So you start sharing these specific examples, not just high level, top of funnel, hey, VAs and offshore exist. People know that. It's now to the next part of the conversation going on in their mind, which is, what am I going to have these people do? And how does it actually work? And what about my doubt, fears, and concerns? And so that was a lot of what it was just educating and then continuing that with my own podcast, Automate and Delegate, and just really putting out there and even sharing about our competitors. Like, at the end of the day, you know, we offer a solution, but there's multiple paths that people can go down. And if we end up being the right fit, then great.
That's super interesting, especially around the education component, because I've been doing the same thing for 6+ years. And I feel like the majority of my job is on the education side that, hey, there's a better way or a different way to do things than you've been doing in the past. So over the last, 4+ years or so, how has your role at the organization changed? I mean, what does your day-to-day look like currently?
Yeah, so we're, a lot of people may be familiar with EOS, Entrepreneurial Operating System. We're big believers in that. It is actually, I really attribute it to helping us hold the glue together. I launched this in 2019, right before the pandemic, right? And so we had a business that was, it was growing rapidly even before the pandemic hit, and it kind of paused and then went back to the same growth pace. But I actually hired an EO Philippines member that was part of the EO Philippines chapter there to be our EOS implementer, and was phenomenal. And so, traditional visionary integrator. So who I mentioned, Jaycel, my very first VA, is kind of our integrator, and I served in the visionary role. In the beginning, I was more directly involved. Honestly, I was doing a lot of the speaking around it and educating and so forth. And then kind of truly, and I can't recommend anything. I'm actually re-listening into it myself right now, because where we are in a growth stage, even the visionary integrator role that she and I have is kind of evolving. A book called Rocket Fuel that talks about the difference in the relationship between those two. That's been my role in the beginning, was more, a little bit more kind of directly involved. I was a part of all our level 10, kind of weekly meetings and so forth. And I found myself backing off to where I'm a part of those monthly, and not as directly engaged in kind of the day-to-day piece.
Understood. So essentially going from like chief evangelist, chief educator to, now kind of the guys, the glue that's holding it all together. A couple more questions here. So what was your situation? You mentioned that you launched prior to the pandemic, married, kids, and you also said that you were in kind of your EO group when you decided to actually put this, pen to paper and go to market. But what else was going on? I mean, was this a shock to the family when you decided to start the company, or did they know that you're going to do something like this?
Well, these crazy people, the married entrepreneurs, that we have a whole lot of small print that comes sometimes with it. But she, my wife and I, we've been married, going on almost 11 years here, and or known each other 10 years, going to get married 10 after next year. And so she's always known me as an entrepreneur. When we got married, we had that other business that I mentioned, and she kind of experienced the ups and downs and so forth with me. And then launching this company, it was an interesting time. So I have a 7-year-old daughter, a 3.5-year-old son, imagine 4 years ago. So he was, wasn't born quite yet. He was about to be on the scene, and my daughter was 3. And I was president of the EO Atlanta chapter during COVID as well. So I'm in the middle of, and we moved into a new house in the middle of COVID. So moved into a new house, president of EO Atlanta, and I got this business kind of Rocket Fuel taken off, and ended up starting another company from accident on all of this called One-on-One Connections that we ended up doing, that provides member-based connections and member-based organizations. So a lot kind of going on. I've been grounded growing up in an entrepreneurial family as well, and seeing how critical it is to stay connected and vetted. And during COVID, didn't have much of a choice, right? I actually launched this company. I went there in 2019. I didn't go back to the Philippines until last October, 3 years later.
Basically you couldn't go. Wow. I didn't even, that's crazy. All your actual employees were virtual to you. You hadn't even met them.
I mean, I had to run the company from a Zoom standpoint, and even our EOS implementer, she had to implement EOS for us virtually. And I was about to sign on 150 person office space when we launched our company in 2019, right before the pandemic hit. It was my forum that actually encouraged me to kind of pause on it. Yeah. And I'm glad I did. And it forced us to learn how to build a fully distributed workforce. So we have about a 5,000 square foot office there for corporate training and for co-working and so forth. But all of our 500 folks, all work, remotely. So it was a competitive advantage. I'm glad it happened, because it forced us to learn how to build a distributed virtual workforce, maintain culture engagement, and purpose-driven. We're hugely aligned to United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, and we do a lot of give back community engagement initiatives. We're all under one roof, and for better or worse, that can add additional kind of intensity when nobody can leave. And so I'm here running Atlanta, and all the stresses and challenges of maintaining an organization, and then my company growing like crazy, moving into a new house. So it just required a lot of communication. My wife and I we're both firstborn A types. Birthdays are 15 days apart. So we get a lot of stuff done, a lot of execution, but we can also kind of have some combustion along the way. We've been intentional about our communication.
Yeah, very similar story to me as well. I think I shared to you prior to jumping on the horn here, is that, we built a house, had my second kid. decided to start a business. Wife is an attorney, so she's very black and white. You know, there is no ambiguity. There's no gray. Like, she needs to be safe. And I decided that I want to kind of blow up our life. And I was a first-time entrepreneur as well. So a lot of highs, a lot of lows, a lot in between. And it took some reps to kind of figure out where the through line was. But communication was, I'd say, the component that got us through. And I used to joke that, you know, the barometer of success for me was like if I'm still married in 5 years, which I'm in year six. So evidently I'm crushing, I guess. But a couple more questions, man. We'll get you out of here. So in these last 4 years or so, has there been a time where you thought about hanging it up, or has it just been continuous success, all good, all green lights, all fun?
I mean, I don't think any entrepreneur would tell you all green lights, all fun. They'd be lying, I think, if they did.
Yeah.
But it's honestly the most passionate. I think part of the reason why we've grown so fast, and also why we've been able to do it even in the middle of a pandemic, is because it is truly, you know, kind of my intersection that I've been looking for. I mean, the teeth whitening industry wasn't super passionate about. I was passionate about growing the business. But I absolutely love what I do, the impact we're making on the people in the Philippines and our staff. I mean, the stories that I see, and I mean, one of our managers, you know, sent me a picture of a car. He was actually able to buy his parents a car in the Philippines for the first time ever because of the opportunity. My own COO was able to build and grow a house and actually buy an investment property, which is kind of unheard of in some cases.
That's awesome.
So seeing them flourish and grow and culture wise. And I mean, it has its bumps and challenges, you know, along the way. And then our clients, you know, I mean, we are truly, I mean, our tagline is redefine how you scale. And during the pandemic, I mean, honestly, some people went, I mean, one client went from 70 employees down to our VA was his only left person that he kept because he could afford it, and helped him figure out a pivot in his business, you know, to kind of get to the other side. So it's definitely had its challenges, but I think it really speaks to anybody advise entrepreneurs, make sure you're passionate about what you do, because if you're not, you're not willing to endure the pain, you will hang it up. And if I wasn't passionate about it, we've definitely had some of our challenges along the way. I would have maybe considered that, but the bigger purpose and why around what we're doing is there. And so I've loved it.
Well, your passion shines through, and I totally agree with you and same. I mean, I've had points where it's a lot of work, but I'm very passionate about what I do as well. And that's the driving force. So a quick pivot here. So what do you think the number one trait is for entrepreneurs that find success versus those that do not?
Resilience. I mean, I try to think of a more wise, pithy, creative thing, you know, that people will say, but I think it's not, you know, if you go back to, I'm a big fan of that book, Angela Duckworth, called Grit. And, you know, in her, it's a very, I would highly recommend anybody read that, and also for your children too.
Yeah.
And looking at some of the most successful people in history, it wasn't the most, you know, intellectual or brightest a lot of times. It was those that just flat could continue getting up, and it's getting up that one more time that makes a difference. You know, when you have 10,000 teeth whitening pins blowing up all over the world because a manufacturer changed things, and you have half of your customers suing the other customers because of a legal battle, it's, am I willing to wake up out of the bed and go fight that battle and get to the other side of it? So
perseverance. Yeah, 100%. If you go back in time and give yourself advice prior to starting this company, what would that piece of advice be? So, game changer.
I mean, we're still so kind of fresh in and kind of getting where we're getting. I mean, one thing that I thought that I would do differently, but I'm glad I did, was, you know, a lot of companies talk about you focusing on niches and getting hyper-focused on niches. But, you know, growing this thing in the middle of COVID, I saw how certain niches got crushed. And so I'm very glad that we organically grew, and we're about 60 different industries. So we're hyper diversified. But I think probably I would have started focusing more on niche marketing and strategy, because right now what we're doing is taking all the 60 industries that we're in, and now we know all the specific types of things that we can do. And so all of our marketing and advertising, now that I'm not doing speaking really to drive as much of our business, you know, you start scrolling on a Facebook ad that says, hey, are you the owner of a personal injury, you know, law firm? You know, do these tasks sound familiar to you? It's going to get higher conversion than just general, hey, we're a VA firm, we can help save you time. So we're doing a lot of that now, but that's one thing I think I would have done, is we would have shifted towards probably earlier last year, shifting more towards niche, because we're starting to do some of it, and it's converting incredibly well. But I probably wanted to wait a little bit longer because I was so terrified of COVID. I want to keep just diversifying and diversifying. Yep. So no client represented more than like 5% of my business. but I probably would have done that a little bit further sooner.
That's interesting. That's something that I toy with myself. It's like, should I niche down? We're broad as well. And you know, half the entrepreneurs you talk to are like niche down, niche down, niche down. Others, you know, like cast a wide net, and it's a struggle for me, candidly. So a couple more questions to get you out of here. So what's the hardest part about owning your own business?
It depends on where you are in different stages. There's different challenges that I would say is the top part. So if you ask me my current stage, you know, kind of right now, it's truly that separation process of now that I've got my integrator, which I've had from the beginning, but truly stepping even further and further away and letting them completely run and being okay with the 85% rule, which I practice and preach, but break the rule myself, which is, you know, unless it's brain surgery, you know, if it gets 85 to 90% of the way that I would do it and actually gets done and I'm able to focus on higher value activities, you know, then it's a win. You know, ironically coming from a guy with an outsourcing delegation business, but you know, it's still the biggest challenge you always kind of have to navigate. And you know, I was actually in a forum group with another group of entrepreneurs, and one guy just left. Him and his partner just took off for 2 months, said, "Nope, we're disappearing for 2 months." Like, you guys figured out. And part of what that does, it removes, you don't realize, like, the subconscious, like, safety net that you provide for employees, that they don't take the thinking all the way through because they know that you'll be there to do kind of maybe a final catch or final review. But if you go off the grid, it's amazing how resourceful and how much your managers think all the way through, because they know Bo's not going to be the last person to maybe catch this or see this. And it's a subconscious thing that they don't even kind of realize. So I've been doing some of that lately, and it's been interesting to see everybody kind of figure out a way to win.
That's super interesting. I was wondering, like, is that a suggestion, or is that, you know, are you trying to dissuade us from doing that? Last question, I'll get you out of here. So, favorite part about being your own boss?
Being able to be as intentional of a parent as I possibly can. I think every generation says it's critical, but I think our generation, man, we got a lot of crazy stuff happening on in our world and things that our children are exposed to in a way that they've never been before, with all the social and everything else, which everybody knows. And I'm fortunate. I mean, we had children a little bit later, you know, in life, and my parents did a phenomenal job at amazing upbringing, and others born in those earlier years, when their parents were younger. But I'm being a business owner, regardless of what age, being able to have that more intentional time. And you know, we're a big fan of Andy Stanley, my wife and I, and he's got a book called Parenting that him and his wife wrote. And it's, you just got to focus on the relationship. And if you can get that right, then everything else will take care of it, because you can't protect them about all the stuff they're going to get exposed to.
Right.
So I'd say it gives me an opportunity to double down on the relationship.
That's awesome. I feel the same. That was one of the big drivers for me jumping out of corporate America, was being able to kind of balance quality of life, you know, and keep things in perspective. So love it, man. Thanks so much for your time. Where can people find you?
You know, a couple spots. I mean, you know, like I said, outsourceaccess.com is our primary website for our business. And, you know, whether you use us or otherwise, you got a lot of great educational content and stuff on there. And, our staff do free discovery sessions for people to kind of just help you figure out and orient in this whole world. And I got a bunch of webinars and educational content. If you send an email to tools@outsourceaccess.com, and just put your first name in the subject line, you can imagine it goes to a VA, and we'll send you a whole list of tools, recorded podcasts, templates, all kinds of cool stuff that I give when I do speaking engagements. AutomateDelegate.com is our podcast. You must check it out. I interview folks and get them to tell me how they're automating and delegating. And you can search me on LinkedIn, as there. I got a lot of content as well.
Excellent, man. We'll be sure to add some links as well. Hey, Brad, thanks so much for coming. Really appreciate it, man. Sincerely. Awesome stuff with the company.
I'll send you, man. Congrats on your journey, and we'll see each other's success moving ahead.
All right, man. Thank you, sir. Take care. Bye-bye.